Welcome to this week's episode of the podcast with me, Russell Davis. And this week I have something very different and very special. If you are a regular listener to my podcast, you know, I very rarely do interviews, and I save those interviews for someone really, really special. Heroes in the fertility world, people I've been looking up to for some time. And this week I have Emma Cannon on the podcast. I had such a wonderful conversation with Emma. I wanted to share that with you. And Emma's been working in this fertility space for decades. When I first started working in this space 15 years ago, she was a leading light in the natural fertility world. Emma is a natural fertility and women's health specialist, and she crosses the bridge between Chinese and Western medicine. And it's more than that. She's just a beautiful, beautiful soul. And I'm going to quote from, it's just a quote from her website. "My life has been one of my greatest teachers. I've been on the deepest healing journey that has times taken me to the brink of death and human suffering. Of course, I have also known great joy, fulfillment, and connection to life and source. I try to meet all of life in the same way." There is a beautiful soul that has known suffering that most of us won't experience. And she's a great advocate of health and helps people know they're enough. That's why I love Emma. It's what she does physically, and now she's doing more work psychologically. It's so in line with my belief that we are enough. We have innate health psychologically, and she's helping people know they have innate health physically as well, and help people connect that innate health within them and call that out within them. So she's a most beautiful soul. She's a goddess of healing and love. So I want to share this conversation I had with Emma with you, and sit back and enjoy, and just be most surprised what it evokes within you that begins to call out your innate health on your journey. It's so lovely to connect. It's been some time, had a conversation. It's so lovely to see you. I know the audience can't see you. I get the beauty of seeing you as we speak. I explained in the introduction why I wanted to speak to you and how you've been in this work for so long. But maybe for the benefit of the audience, how did you become to be working in this space of fertility?
By accident, like all best things in life. sometimes a series of unfortunate events that turned out to be fortunate. So I had studied acupuncture, and I was very keen to build bridges with Western medicine. I read a book very early on, and it's a great book if you've never read it. It's called The Web That Has No Weaver. Ted Catchup, and he wrote it in the 70s, really old book, and it's always on the reading list. And there's a kind of paragraph in that book that just, you know, when you have those moments in life where you're like, yes, that makes sense to me. Now, this is bearing in mind that I had never felt that I fitted in, belonged. At school I always felt like a misfit. You know, I was not one of those popular head of the class. I wasn't really good at sport. You know, I, as it turns out, I am fairly intelligent, but school definitely did not find it in me. So I had sort of struggled through some jobs and never really felt like I belonged. Waitressing, weirdly, was the only other thing I've done that I was actually really good at, because I love people, you know, and I can connect with people. So, and that idea of service as well.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of waitressing, and I did proper jobs as well, but I never really liked the proper jobs. Anyway, I came across acupuncture, but I very soon, there's a line in this book where it says the book of Western medicine is continually being written. And so it may well within it contain elements of Chinese medicine and mind medicine and all of that kind of thing. And I thought in that moment, that's what I want to do. I want to build bridges with Western medicine. Wow. And I want to take acupuncture to, you know, take it out of the dusty shops with the weird signs in the window and the weird bones and things like that. And I want to take the essence of it and make it more accessible to people. Yeah. Take away some of the weird language and really bring that idea of this sort of very compassionate medicine that considers the emotions as well as the physical. So I that's how I got started, really. I'm really grateful for that kind of that insight came in, because it really helped focus me.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I'm a big fan of Chinese medicine, acupuncture, and I think if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't have had our son. Absolutely, definitely, you know. It was meeting someone similar to you, you know, Trevor Wing, just is similar soul to you. So it bridges the kind of traditional Chinese medicine and a people person. It's what I love about you. You are a people person, which I'm going to come back to in a minute. So I just love that you have embraced that kind of purpose in your life and introduced this more holistic, wonderful way of people finding health and their own fertility.
We're so much more than our you know, our blood results and our scan results. And, you know, I think Western medicine really misses a trick on that. And, you know, it's like we are whole people. We're, you know, we're a soul, we're a personality, we're emotions, we're our past, we're our, you know, our parents' past, we're our belief systems, we're so multidimensional.
It was such a breath of fresh air to my wife, an appointment with Trevor, and to have that kind of whole time to say the whole holistic view of her health, her life, her lifestyle, not just one bit of plumbing within her, one little result of one aspect of her body, her biology. It was actually looking at everything. And that was a real breath of fresh air. And she felt listened to, she felt heard and understood, because she had time to really unpack everything. And it was a complete turning point in her own health and well-being, but also, I say, us having our son, because even, you know, when she got her fourth cycle back and was misdiagnosed by Western medicine, in fact, and it was having that holistic view, could see what was really going on, and got her full cycle back for the first time, and found there's no reason why she couldn't have children. But then I found out I had a fertility problem. So actually I saw Trevor, you know, as a gynecologist, I saw Trevor as a patient, because again, I'm a big fan of acupuncture and Chinese medicine. And it wasn't for that, I wouldn't believe I could have shifted my own fertility, and it improved dramatically. So we're very thankful for, kind of the work you do and bringing this into the world. And say about your people person, I think we both have the same mission about people knowing they're enough, that they are whole. And often they just don't realize it. And that's what I love about your work as well. So tell me more about your perspective on that, how you came to that, and how that influences your work.
Yeah, so I did a TED Talk quite a few years ago now. Amazing how quickly the time passes. And I was playing with this idea of fertile thinking and barren thinking. And I was really worried at the time, because I was like, I'm using this word barren. It's really a affronting word. But actually, I kind of got away with it, because we don't use it in that capacity anymore. It's really interesting. But it was sort of this play on fertile being that abundance, that idea of abundance, there is enough, there's always enough, that actually any healthy system has a reciprocal energy in it. There's reciprocity within the earth. If we tap into that, if we don't take too much or give too much, then there's this energy that just regenerates itself. Now, the problem is that we live in a very lack-driven society, which I name the barren society, where we're constantly fed this message that we're not enough. If someone else is winning, we're losing. There aren't enough jobs to go around. Immigrants are coming to take our jobs. I heard of three women that had, you know, got pregnant the other day. That's three more babies out there for me. Do you know what I mean? It's like, We attach all of this meaning to this very lower vibration of fear and barrenness and not being enough, often reinforced early on in our life, as you know, through the way that we're taught at school, or if we don't fit into a certain mold, like I didn't, you know, and then throughout our life, we're just operating this compensatory behavior all the time to try and compensate for this underlying feeling that we're not enough or that somehow we're broken. Now, what I witnessed, because when I started this, there was no wellness industry. There wasn't even a word for wellness. You couldn't even say energy. But what I found, I mean, obviously wellness has had many good benefits, and you know, that I think it's great that people have more attention, but there is a shadow to wellness, which is this perfectionism that is born out through social media as well, that I'm not enough, that person's got it all, that person manages to be stick thin and, you know, have the body of an athlete and, you know, and also conceive or whatever, you know. So we project a lot of our own not enoughness onto these perfect images that we're constantly paraded. Actually, I treated many of those fitness Instagrammers, and most of them have terrible gynecology and no periods at all. So, you know, this idea of what that we have of health and perfection isn't necessarily fertile, and definitely in the underlying psyche for that's not what I call a fertile environment, because you're always striving for something else. So I like, because you know I like to write as well. So I like to sort of play with these ideas, and that's one that I'm sure you really recognize as well. Yeah. Is that there, you know, and the problem with that belief system is if we do everything right and it still doesn't work, there must be something really wrong with me.
Yeah, exactly. There must be something in me, or I am broken, something wrong with me. I've done everything, it's not working. I must be broken, which reinforces that I'm not enough. It goes from I'm not enough to I'm broken. You're right, that I'm not enough does leak out to that. People don't realize, they think, I haven't got enough time, I haven't got enough money, I haven't got enough health. It's actually that core I'm not enough, that lack mentality leaks out into all different areas of life. And you're right, including health. There's always something else to do. And when they try everything and it's not working, it goes back to it must be me, I must be broken. Because it works for them, it didn't work for me, there must be something wrong with me.
Yeah. And the meaning that we attach to things as well. I mean, I think, you know, because we can test a lot now and do all of that sort of thing, you know, if we do everything right and it doesn't happen, what we make that mean becomes another burden. So I read a really interesting case the other day, and somebody came to me and they were a nutritional fertility coach, I think. And she was prescribed 3 IUI cycles, and then it would move on to IVF. She'd failed 1 IUI, but in her head, she'd already failed. She'd already written off the other 2. Wasn't going to work. And then she was going to have to move on to IVF. And I was like, okay, well, that's interesting, because first of all, you're catastrophizing because you haven't failed them yet. And I'm really interested in what you've made that mean. So what have you made that mean about you? And it was so interesting. I got her to write a list of all the meanings she'd attached to it. I'm failed as a woman. I'm failed as a fertility nutritional coach because I should know what to do to fix myself. I shouldn't need IVF. I was like, my God, I mean, that's a burden. You know, she'd failed 1 IUI and already she had attached this huge amount of meaning, which I think, Russell, it creates this sense in the body that you're not safe.
Yeah.
And for me, that is the enemy of fertility, you know.
I talk about there's 3 parts of our brain. The oldest part of our brain is top of our spinal cord, it's the reptilian brain, it's the fight or flight syndrome. Wrapped around our brain's development is the mammalian brain. That part of our brain has the same structure as mammals' brains. Its survival is dependent on the pack being secure and our position in the pack being secure. And wrapped around that is the cortex, the human brain, where emotional intelligence is not fully formed till later teenage years. So prior to, as a child, the mammalian brain is quite dominant. It's about safety and security. It thinks our survival is dependent. It's dependent on people accepting us, almost liking us.
Of course.
Or meeting people's expectations of position in the tribe and the pack is safe, whether it's the family unit or the friendship circle. Or if there's conflict in the tribe, it feels under threat. you cannot feel safe. You like to become about feeling safe and secure.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes back down to. If we don't feel that, that's when the fight or flight syndrome kicks in. And that's what's flooding through our system and impacting our health and well-being.
Yeah. And of course, that's what the barren thinking does, is it makes us feel like we're not safe, you know?
Totally.
And often, you know, there, of course, there are some incredible medics out there, and I've worked hand in hand with them for many, many years. But there's also sometimes there's a lack of safety within that system. Yeah. You know, there's no one answering the phone. I can't get this. I didn't. Yeah. I asked a question. No
one. Talk to clinic saying the quality of the Medicare is great, but your patient kind of pathway, the patient experience, often you're missing the trick on some very simple things. To say, not picking up the phone, not getting back to people, not having their notes, little things like that make a big difference to the patient's experience and feeling safe and held by the clinic. They're trusting this clinic and they want to feel safe and held by it.
And language as well, Russell, that's a big thing for me. You know, I mean, I think that the language carries so much power, you know, and all of these words that we have, like incompetent cervix, you know, like hysterectomy, which is basically comes from the word hysterical, you know. It's like that we were going to remove this, the hysterical bit of this woman, you know. It's so... It's so, it's such a judgment, there's such a judgment in there, isn't there? And also the medicine really needs to evolve to create that safety, but also to give some responsibility to the patient as well. It's, I've heard so often people saying, is there anything that I can do? No, there's nothing that you can do is going to make any difference to the science. That just isn't true, you know? I really don't believe that. I mean, obviously, there are some cases when that may be true, but there's always something you can do to support it, which has been a huge part of my work, really, is working, building that bridge.
And I love you also build the bridge between the psychological and the physical as well, with the holistic physical and the psychological, and getting the patient to write down those, the meaning they attach to things is really powerful. I was just saying, I was interviewed earlier today for someone else's kind of summit, and I'm saying how, you know, we have these old, these stories we learned, just saying, let's get people to write them down, write down all these thoughts that hold you back, these beliefs you have, I'm not worthy, I don't deserve, let's write them down, see what the judgments are in there, and forgive yourself for judgment. You know, I forgive myself for judging myself as not being worthy, or I forgive myself for judging myself as not being deserving, what it may be, and just release yourself from those old stories, because they're not yours, they're someone else's judgments you picked up along the way.
But they're coming up, aren't they, at the moment? Like, I'm really noticing, like I was saying to you, I think before we started, is, you know, when I first started this, you know, I spent a lot of time persuading women that drinking a bottle of Chardonnay and eating a packet of Haribos for dinner, probably other things are available, probably didn't constitute a very fertile diet. But now the conversation's really different. You know, there's such a shift in our consciousness. And I think that even if we don't necessarily have the language for it and we're not comfortable with the language around it, I think a lot of people feel like their emotions are involved in this and they're not separate. And,
absolutely. You know,
I think people instinctively feel that.
So if those people listening, if you never get an opportunity to say anything to them again, what would you want to leave them with? What would you say? What would your advice be to these women on their journey to fertile health and getting pregnant?
I would say that, well, first of all, you're enough, you know, and that you're already perfect as you are. And also this idea about comparisons. I think comparisons are such a big area, but infertility, I think it's really prominent, you know, how we pitch ourselves against another woman, how we think that if someone else is winning, we're losing, how, you know, they've looks like they've all got it going on the out, you know, on the outside, whoever knows what's going on the inside, you know. And so I would really be careful about comparisons, you know, stay in your lane. Everybody's journey is completely unique. And although I think it can be helpful to talk and share each other's stories, I think that if we compare ourselves and try and mimic that, I think that can be a mistake. So I think, you know, staying in your own lane with it, and be curious about what comes up, because I think it can be a very healing journey for people. And I think all of the pain that we go through, and I'm no stranger to it. I lost two babies, and one quite late. And both those losses were huge doorways for deeper healing for me.
Yeah.
And I think if instead of always thinking, you know, what's wrong with me, I think one of the questions is like, what's happened to me? So it's one of the things that I ask people is like, what happened to me to you? Tell me your story. Yeah. So rather than making everything a pathology,
yeah.
you know, it's like, tell me your story, because this is one of the things that I think Western medicine has become less good at, is in this age where they have tests that they can rely on and they can do scans and they can look at your blood at, you know, minute level. I think they've forgotten about the story and the evolution of that story and how you got to be where you are and what formed you. And, you know, tell me about your mother, you know? So I think just be curious about that. And one more thing is, I think people get very hooked up on the how they're going to have a baby. And I think it's really useful sometimes to return to the why you want to have a baby and what it is you're trying to create. Because when you come from the why, you're kind of coming from that heart space.
Yeah.
And there's so much more expansion in that than the how. I'm running out of ideas. And of course, we all have to visit the how at times, but a really good thing to do is just to return to the why.
Yeah, I love that. One of the first questions I ask when I meet someone, they want to explore work with me, is, so what will having a baby give you?
Uh-huh,
nice. So, and think about that.
That is the why, isn't it?
That is the why. And just to connect to what's behind all this. Let's recognize that, acknowledge that, and come from that space.
Yeah.
No, I love that.
I think, and you know, just to be compassionate with yourself. I think the stories that we tell ourselves are sometimes the lowest, hardest, harshest, you know, part of the story. You know, I'm a failure. I'm not good enough. That there must be something really wrong with me. You know, and because we're not given an answer, we try and fill it with, with the brain has to go somewhere, you know. And I really, you know, let it go to compassion, you know, be kind to yourself.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
Emma, thank you. Thank you so much. I might even share this video, because I get to see you as you share this. I get to see your glow and your smile. It's just so wonderful. Just the heart that flows through everything you do. So thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing that. And I really encourage your audience here to find out more about your work and really connect to you.
Oh, thank you.
So how can they do that? What's the best way for people just to...
I'm not very good at this, but I have a website.
Cool. I'll definitely post the website link in the show notes.
I think that's just emmacannon.co.uk, or is that an email thing? Anyway.
Sure it is. I'll post it on
just Google Emma Cannon, you'll find me. There is somebody called Emma Gannon, and she said that sometimes people speak to her and are a bit disappointed that she can't help them have a baby. So I'm Emma Cannon with a C, Cannonball, and I've written a few books, and I'm on Instagram as Emma L. Cannon.
Great.
So, and I actually really enjoy Instagram.
And they're worth reading, other books. I recommend those as well. So Emma, thank you so much for your time. It's been so lovely to reconnect.
Yeah, you too.